Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for visiting our sponsors and supporters. Just we're the day after election, and that's probably going to be a major topic today. I'm not sure. But my name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
Pat, please.
About three shows ago, we were talking about criminal law and what you have to prove, whether or not you have to prove intent. Remember, we were talking about mortgage fraud, and I was quoting somebody that said it's really hard to prove intent in mortgage fraud. And I blurted out, you don't have to prove intent in a criminal case. I meant motive. For those of you out there that thought, she must be a real know-nothing. No, yeah, you don't have to prove motive. Juries like motive, because if you're on trial for murder, we always want to know, why did you kill him? But we don't have to prove that. We just have to prove you did it on purpose. Bad mind, evil intent, evil act.
And our criminal justice system has really changed from motive to your current state of mind, meaning we'll excuse certain crimes because, well, come from a poor background or you do whatever else.
That's in sentencing.
Yes.
That's sentencing. That's different from conviction.
Conviction, okay. So, but you're still going to be convicted of the act, and then the question is in the sentence.
Right, particularly in death penalty cases, because you have to weigh mitigating and aggravating circumstances. So mitigating is, yeah, I grew up a poor black child. Remember that from Steve Martin's movie? You have to prove that kind of thing. Just look how pathetic I am. You don't want to give little old me the death penalty.
Don't want to put me in with those ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah. That's right, those ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah, but that's the same kind of thinking, Pat, that the liberals use now, liberals, leftists, whatever, when they undermine the law enforcement in whatever area they're in control of. They say, well, you can't hold these people accountable because they had a poor background, or they were raised in poverty, or they had racial discrimination against them, and it's interesting. Like I may have mentioned before, when we used to do assessments on which people we would recommend for parole coming out of prison, those are the factors we would use to keep them in prison.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we know that, for example, certain people with certain kind of criminal activity, that would be something that would really weigh against them. You know, where
sure.
Now they looked at it as an excuse, well, a person had a rough life. So.
But you have to look at how the criminal justice system, the checks and balances, because the jury decides on the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's up to the jury, not the judge.
Right.
And it's up to them, as drawn from the community. You are the community's voice. Do you want this person back in the community with you? Or do you want them to be incarcerated? Or do you want them to be executed?
Mm-hmm.
It's up to you. That's one of the places where the community meets the criminal justice system.
Yeah.
Another place is grand jury. The grand jury's brought in from the community, and it's up to them whether or not to indict. And another place is the election of the district attorney. Because once a district attorney's in there, if they're not prosecuting the kind of cases that you want them to proceed, then get rid of them.
Right.
So you vote them out. So there are places where the community interacts with the criminal justice system to make it an expression of the community, and that all communities are different.
Well, let's tie this into the election in Virginia yesterday with the election of an attorney general who... It will be the highest law enforcement officer in the state who had verbalized that he wanted to kill his opponent. So, you know, when we talk about people and what the people want, they're all crazy.
Yeah, and that was in Virginia.
Right, that's what
Jay
I said.
Jay Jones, I believe was his name.
Yes.
He wasn't reelected. He was elected for the first time.
Correct.
And defeated someone who had been in that office before.
Among men, he got 58% of the vote. Among women, he got 55% of the vote.
Liberalism is a mental disease, can I say?
And
I mean, yesterday I saw a picture of him trying to kick a dog. That right there, I wouldn't vote for anybody that's going to kick a dog.
And we also got a Muslim woman as lieutenant governor, and we also got a very progressive female governor who
has stated she won't work with President Trump to create jobs.
And who was also very vapid in her COVID responses when she was in the, I don't know if she was in the Senate or in the House, I don't know which, but she, there's pictures of her in full hazmat gear during COVID.
She also refused to make a statement about the attorney general who was running, and the fact that he had talked about doing violence to his political opponents.
She was selling his merch on her website.
I don't know if people are so into the ideology of right and left, or if it's so into the personalities of the people or the looks of the people, or if it's all just hate Trump.
It's hate Trump.
Well,
it's winning at any cost, and it's putting party before country.
Yes.
One of the things that I've noticed in discussions is people have lost the ability to separate the powers given to various levels of government versus the powers that you perceive a person having. I'm going to say, I heard people talking that they weren't going to vote for, locally, they weren't going to vote for our mayor, who did win, because of SNAP. Well, there's absolutely no linkage between SNAP and the mayor.
Can't fix stupid.
Exactly, you cannot.
And those are the people that are blaming him for SNAP that aren't blaming it on Trump. And he has nothing to do with it.
And he has nothing to do with it. So you look at the areas of responsibility, and when you're electing someone, and the areas of authority that they have.
There is also the issue. Now, we are a nonpartisan. We're 501c3. I'm not taking sides. However, of the elections last night that the Democrats won, the places where they won elections voted for Kamala Harris.
They were all in blue states.
So why did we expect anything different what happened?
I didn't.
I was hoping there was some intelligence and that logic would precede party loyalty.
There you go again. You're always talking about logic.
But wasn't
and
this,
I keep telling you, there is no logic.
I'm naive.
And it is, unfortunately, it is partisan. I always vote Democrat is one of the statements that was heard. Or there are people who would vote for Jack the Ripper if he had a D after his name.
Mm-hmm. But don't these people in New York City with the election of Ondami, when he's talking about all of the stuff that he wants to be free, don't they think somewhere in their head, well, who's paying for this? Because it's not going to be free to everybody. It might be free to me, but somebody's paying for it.
Well, Mondani explained it. He said he was going to raise taxes on white people and on corporations, even if they didn't do business in New York.
So then why are these white people voting for him, is my point.
Well, they're not too smart.
Because I kind of feel like people look at issues on how is it going to affect me. And I'm going to vote for who's going to give me what I want.
You know,
I think part of the answer to your question is, if you look at what's going on in this country, which is really alarming when you look at it, it's this excessive immigration. And I'm talking about not only illegal immigration, but legal immigration has gone way beyond what it was in the past. And when you look at the immigration in New York City, in 1970, 18% of the residents of New York City were born outside of this country. I'm not saying they were here illegally, but they weren't natural. They weren't born in this country. Now it's over 40%. Okay, so you say from 1970. And if you look at what Mondani received, he received 65% or 65% at least, maybe even a little more, of the immigrants that of immigrants, people that were not born in this country. And he received less than 40% of the people who were natural born citizens. So what you see is the impact of massive immigration. And that's where you get this appeal to these factors that we can't understand it. Why is this person appealing to them? Because these people are not traditional Americans.
They're not racist
Americans. And that's the danger with all this immigration.
But it's still the gimme. What's in it for me?
That's always been the appeal of socialism.
Yeah, and they do have a history of that.
In his victory speech, Mamdani declared war on President Trump, capitalism, and traditional America. That's who they just elected.
I read an article this morning that said Van Jones was surprised at how angry his speech was and how loud it was. And he said, Van Jones said, he missed an opportunity, I think. You know, he was so calm and warm and embracing while he was running. And then we hear his victory speech and he's like an angry,
he's an angry socialist. That's what he is.
And quoting Eugene Debs and Nehru, who crushed the Hindus. And the CNN analyst that's from Fox News looked at him and said, you're surprised that he, now that he won, that his mask fell off and he's not Mr. Shiny, happy guy like he was when he was running? How stupid are you?
And that's a witnessing of a huge infusion of power that he got a dose of and he couldn't stand not having it come out. That's power. Whether he has as much power as he thinks, based on what his role is and his authority versus the state and other people, and I believe he's off base on a lot of his thoughts there. But man, he's now infused with powers.
Right.
And the other thing too is, like we talk about immigration, he is an immigrant. He wasn't born in this country.
Nope.
So you have all these immigrants that are from outside this country, and they are relating to him because he's one of them.
Well, he's
and
his
that's
parents
the point he was making
that.
At that speech was, I'm one of you now. We're going to go out and turn things upside down.
Well, his parents said he isn't one of us, right?
But the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, so we're now going to jump to the other side of the fence where it's all crabgrass. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said E70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at E70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms, new guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at E70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If E70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, E70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than E70 Pond. Of course, E70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. E70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If bail and wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Where are we going to go?
I want to go back to Mondami. I want to know how things are going to get paid for, because if the corporations are going to be taxed more, corporations will up and leave. If there's nobody creating jobs for people to afford to live there, they'll be leaving. The stuff isn't free. Somebody is going to be paying for the stuff.
One of the things that I heard yesterday or the day before on Hugh Hewitt's show was that 48% of the New York City taxes are paid by 1% of the population.
Yes. That's not surprising. That's the way all taxes work.
Yeah. And it's true nationwide.
But there's
and
never
we
been
need
a-
to, we need, don't laugh at me when I say this, but we need to start taxing welfare payments and SNAP, because until we do that, the people that receive those have no reason not to vote for higher taxes.
Well, who's
because they're not paying them.
Who's going to create the jobs that pay the salary that's going to afford people to live there? It doesn't make any sense to
me. It doesn't make sense to you, because the people that vote for Mamdani are the kind of people that don't understand how economics works. They've never understood it. All the people that have embraced socialism in whatever country they're in, they don't understand the simple precept that you've just named, that somebody's got to pay for it. And Margaret Thatcher said, socialism is fine until you run out of somebody else's money.
And if you look at San Francisco, where all those people that wanted the minimum wage to be, what, $30 or whatever else, those jobs have now been replaced by the automated kiosks.
And Mamdani wants a $30 minimum wage in New York, too. He promised during, he was very specific about this, Kim, during his run, that he was going to make the corporations pay, and he was going to make white people in white neighborhoods pay. So the ignorant people that don't know how economics works, they don't understand these people are not captive.
What color is he?
Well, he obviously doesn't consider himself to be white. But
his
you know,
family's
that's racist.
From India.
Yeah, he says he's Asian. That's racist. You can't do that in this country. I'm only going to tax white people.
Well, the other things that he's talking about with rent control. If you look at rent control from the aspect of the landlord, his property tax is going to go up. His cost of insurance is going to go up. His liability is going to go up. It's going to get to the point where the landlord is going to say, "Screw it."
But you got to remember, Kim, you're thinking logically, and you're thinking about the impact of things in the future. They don't think that way.
Thank you, Gary Egoff, and critical thinking.
No, you're doing very well in that area. These other people don't. But the whole Marxist philosophy is you divide people between the haves and the have-nots. The have-nots want stuff that the haves have, and they don't care how to get it. All they say is tax the rich, and that's what he's talking about. Same thing like this. They've had this rent control in New York City before.
Yeah,
and
all
they
the
had
way along.
To do away with it. What happens is if you have a landlord owns some property, and normally the way it was set up, you could not raise the rent on somebody that was renting from you until they moved out. Then you could raise the rent on the new renters coming in. But as long as those people existed. So you own a piece of property and you're not getting enough rent to pay for its maintenance. You got to pay for insurance. So what happens is it starts to deteriorate. You as the landlord, you don't keep that property up. So it turns into a slum situation. And that's exactly what they're going to experience.
Well, there's another aspect.
And they've been down this road before. But these people, you've got to remember, these are immigrants that are coming over. They're looking for free stuff. And, you know, we talk about the SNAP program. All these social programs should be time limited. They shouldn't be something that you, once you're on a SNAP program, you stay on the rest of your life.
You've got to reapply.
Yeah, reapply. But you've got to show that you've got a job.
You have
to. you know, make them work-oriented to get people off them, because otherwise it becomes total dependency.
Well, Alan, there's another aspect to the rent control thing, and I know this from personal experience. I'm not going to name names. If you have a rent-controlled apartment in New York City, and let's say you're getting on in age and you move out of the city to go live with your daughter, and you're old enough to have a grandchild who wants to go to college in New York, well, that grandchild will come in under your name and do it in a way that doesn't change hands, so the rent doesn't go up.
Family controlled.
Mm. Yeah. So anybody, there are even ways to get around it.
Anybody watch Friends growing up? That amazing apartment they lived in, that was rent control. And they talked about it because, you know, at the end of the show, they all moved out and left their key.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they couldn't, when you look at those people in that show, there was no way they could have afforded that apartment, rent control or otherwise.
No.
But again, as the landlord, you couldn't just abandon the property. I mean, the property still had basic value. You had to sort of live on losing money every year for a period of time until you hoped somebody would either die or move out.
Mary, did you say there's going to be a penalty for moving out of New York?
Yes. They're talking about a $100,000 penalty for some of the big spenders that are moving out. Now,
which is true in New Jersey.
And who passes that as law?
Well, it's already true in New Jersey. If you sell your house in New Jersey
as a state,
and you do not buy a house in New Jersey because you're leaving, you get charged an exit fee. But I want to mention Hot Air today.
And that hasn't been
has an article
that hasn't been tested in the courts. Are you saying that?
No, it's in effect. I don't know if it's been tested or not. But there's an article at Hot Air.
That sounds so unjust to be unbelievable.
There's a picture of Mamdani with Alex Soros, who was the son of George Soros, and I don't know if you call them tweets anymore. It's a post on X. And the comment is, this is the ending of Animal Farm, the very ending. Read it while you still can, and you'll know what I mean. Did anybody read? Have you guys? Okay. You need to go find it and read it.
I've read Animal Farm, but it was so many years ago.
Likewise.
Yeah, what's the gist of it, Mary?
All animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others.
Yeah.
So it ends up the way communism does. You have an elite, they want for nothing, they have total power, and then you have all the proletariat who scrape by on you know, handouts.
And not unlike we see in one of the parties here, that a party in control wants to keep people dependent to be the other tier of people.
Well, California froze rents during COVID.
And that didn't end well.
No.
Like, it was similar to the comments earlier.
Right.
Well, not only did they freeze rent, but they also froze that you had to pay your rent for that period of time in certain areas. So you were living rent-free. Now that the
It was an eviction moratorium.
Yeah, eviction moratorium. And that landlord or property owner still had to pay for heat, still had to pay the taxes, still had to pay everything, even though there was no income coming in.
And the only way to deal with that financially is to mortgage the building beyond what it might have originally been mortgaged, like a second mortgage, gets expensive. I mean, it's a crazy... It's a doom loop. That's the word.
One of the problems with California, they're in the process of going bankrupt. The real estate laws in California are such that if you bought a house in 1965 for $60,000, as long as you lived in that house, you paid the same real estate tax that you paid on that $60,000 value. When you sold the house, and I know of an example, $60,000 house sold in the past 5 years for $1.2 million, the people who buy the house pay real estate taxes on what it was sold for, and they will continue to pay that number. But think of all the revenue you lost in those...
That's why Pacific Palisades hasn't rebuilt, because a lot of the people living there inherited those houses from their parents, and they were old houses, and they could afford the taxes and whatnot. And
the taxes weren't raised because...
And they can't afford to rebuild there.
Yeah.
Well, I have that same worry just in general with property taxes. It seems to me that people always talk about private property. Is it ever really private property? You buy your lot, you build your house, you pay for it, it's paid off, but then you've got property taxes forever and ever and ever and ever. Well, when you retire, your income goes down. What? So you can lose your house because you can't afford to pay the taxes on something that you already owned and paid for. Mm-hmm. So in my perfect world, in Kim's perfect world, when you retire and your house is paid off, you shouldn't have to pay property tax anymore. What is private property?
Move
if they can
Florida.
Always take it.
Move to Florida.
If they can take it away from you, do you ever really own it?
In Florida, they're trying to get rid of property tax.
Yeah, I don't know they're going to be successful because they don't have state taxes already. I know it puts it all on the traveling group,
but again,
not residents.
The property tax has to pay for the infrastructure, for the roadways, the police, the fire.
Well, I thought that was the gas tax and then the grocery tax. And then the hospitality tax,
well,
and then the
Florida
sales tax.
Florida doesn't have the...
If it moves tax...
The Florida population is an older population, so they're not paying for schools to the degree that other places are paying for schools. In fact, I believe I'm correct on this, the Villages pays very limited real estate taxes because their rules, you can't have anybody under 18 there, so they don't
support a school system.
You know, they're not a tax on the schools.
Well, my question remains, what is private property? Because ever own it.
No.
Well, you own it, but you've got obligations to
and
pay.
And they can take it away from you.
And they can't take it away.
The one that kills me is car tax, the auto tax.
Yeah, yes.
Same thing.
It just peeves me every time I get that bill that we have to pay taxes for the privilege
it's
of owning a car.
Tax, the luxury
but what,
tax.
What we're seeing here with all of this conversation is the federal government has gone from have very limited purpose, very limited cost, actually. It's supposed to be provide defense and a couple other things. Now it's a welfare state. We are paying for a welfare state that most of us, looking back on it, say, well, how did we get here? We get here because we listen to these leftists, and a lot of politicians went along with it to get reelected. And once the programs are in, they never take them away. All these welfare programs, and now we give it to all the immigrants, like Medicare and SNAP and all this stuff. The immigrants are getting that stuff too.
And most of those programs are run very, very inefficiently.
With a lot of fraud in the inefficiencies too.
We're going to take another quick break. Again, thanks for staying with us.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? People in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Thank you for listening to the sponsors and supporters. Mary, you were going to continue.
I just wanted to make a comment about real estate tax. Theoretically, our real estate tax pays for our schools and other community type things. And just to mention, there is a retirement community going into New Bern right as we speak, supposed to be up and running in 5 or 6 years, that is not going to pay real estate tax. And the theory behind that is it's a retirement community. They're not going to be using the schools. They don't feel that the public safety people will be called in there very often. They're not expecting a crime rate in this retirement community.
No, they should be expecting the ambulances
on a regular basis. But there are a couple of things that, you know, they've justified not charging the real estate tax on.
Well, the reason that they're not going to charge the real estate tax is because this is sponsored by a religious organization, which most religious property is tax exempt.
And who is this?
The Baptist thing that's going to go up here on...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's about, you know, the traffic circle
where Creekside School is. It's across the street from Creekside School.
Okay. And I just want to do one more quote before we move on. This is a quote from Mamdani's acceptance speech. We will prove there is no problem too large for government to solve and no concern too small for it to care about. And the comment, it's an ex post, genuinely one of the most horrifying quotes I've ever heard from a politician.
It's directly opposed to our founding fathers. A government big enough to solve every problem is big enough to take everything you own.
Yes.
Well, remember what Reagan said, he famously said, that the government would be very skeptical when the government says, we're here and we're here to help.
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
The most frightening words in the American language. I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
So, and he's the opposite. He's saying exactly, that's what I'm saying. These immigrants coming in do not share the values that we share. And are you finished with the tax stuff, Mary?
Yes.
Okay.
Go for it.
I just want to follow up our conversation about immigration. Because if you look at what's happening in Europe, just like we're having this problem in New York City, they're having the same problem in Europe. They've had such an influx of immigrants that the countries have changed so much that the immigrants are now running the countries. And like if you go to London, I think they have a foreign mayor. And
Sadiq Khan.
Yeah, there you go. And so my point is, if we're going to save the country, we've got to do something about immigration. And we did that. And historically, back in the 1920s, the Republican Congress and the Republican president passed a law that put quotas on immigration. They went to each country and said, we will only accept so many immigrants from the different countries. And that was legal and illegal. So it wasn't a matter of just stopping the illegals. And that was in effect until 1965. And in 1965, the Democrat-controlled Congress, plus President Johnson, signed a law that did away with the quotas. So now we don't have any quotas from any of the countries. And I think we need to go back to that system. We need to go back to a system and determine how many immigrants can we reasonably import into this country without turning our country over to people that don't even believe what we believe.
When you say
we had it for 40 years.
When you say import, you mean not just import, but to assimilate.
Well, commit to the country. Yes, that's what I mean.
Become
by import,
American.
I mean become American, believe what we do. If they don't, here's what I look at. If you're an immigrant and you want to overturn the country like this Mamdani wants to do from the quote you just made, Mary, go back to where you came from. But we cannot continue taking all these immigrants in. It needs to be stopped.
To go along with that thought process, I really think that our founding fathers never intended us to have immigrants as our senators and congressmen and leaders, because then we're changing cultures. We're bringing in foreign cultures like we have with the squad, the Muslim.
Sure.
squad people, they have their own ideology, and then they, the people that are in office that hate our culture are trying to change that culture. So I would be all for some kind of statute law that would say you have to be an American-born citizen to hold federal office.
Won't now, pass constitutional muster.
Right.
Based
now,
on what? Based on what, though? Because our constitutional is for
equal
U.S.
protection.
For our citizens. If you're not a citizen, why do you get equal protection of anything?
They're naturalized citizens. They are. Mondani's a citizen. Now, he did not renounce.
Dual citizenship?
He did not read. Yeah, but he did not renounce his Ugandan citizenship.
That's my point.
But it's a good point. All I'm saying is that already exists, what you said, but only for the president and I believe the vice president. They have to be
natural born.
So, but I agree with you. I mean, without that, you could just get these people. They come in, they're in the country 5 years to become a citizen, and they can do whatever they want.
What's really scary is, have you heard Mamdani's father? The
no.
blurbs
yes.
from him?
No.
He said that the Nazis learned to do concentration camps from Abraham Lincoln.
What?
Yeah. That Lincoln was the progenitor for putting Indians on reservations. And so all of that, all of the concentration camps and whatnot that have come down from that are Lincoln's fault. And so his dad is a nut bar. And you know, an apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Talking about legal immigration, I mean, we've got a process. I don't understand the past quotas versus what we have now. But we have a process, and there's a gate. I don't know how big the gate is, but somebody manages that. And so I would like to learn more about it, because it's not like, come on in. There is a process. I know people that spent a lot of money and a lot of time coming in legally. It's not easy. I mean, more than a decade and tens of thousands of dollars.
But that's legal.
That's legal. So, I mean, how are a lot of legal people coming in? And I'm ignorant, so I got to learn this. Shouldn't talk about stuff on the radio I don't know that much about. But I do know that coming in legally is time-consuming and expensive. So how can we have so many coming in
Because they get in on mechanisms that avoid that, like these H-1B visas.
Okay, now that's...
And these things where they come in as workers.
And then overstay.
They come in as students and they overstay.
So those are the ones that we've got to go after to make sure they're managed properly.
I think we need to start, like I said, the original quota system that the Republicans put in the 1920s, they had specific quotas from each country. Once you got to that level, it stopped. So then you could control it. Now, if people are getting in some underhanded way, that should count against their, and you find out about it, should count against their quota.
I was understanding that there was still some quota system. I recall hearing Trump say something about that we accepted 1 million people a year or some number like that.
But remember, we're a benevolent country. We're willing to help all of the poor and
bring us your poor, bring us your afflicted.
Yes, and whether the...
You're sniveling.
Yes, exactly. But so we're a benevolent country.
Just to give you another example of how this can happen, how they can take over. Now, we look at New York City as one of the biggest cities in the country, right? But there's been places already, like in Michigan, there's this town that's called Hamtramck or something like that.
Or Dearborn.
And Dearborn's also. And this particular city, it's got 28,000 people. In 1970, 95% of the people were American-born. Now it's less than 25% in the city. The mayor is an immigrant. The chief of police is an immigrant. All six people on the city council are immigrants. And, you know, you do that, you've turned that whole
You're changing
city.
The culture.
Exactly. You've turned it over to the immigrants, and some of which have only been there maybe 3, 4 years, 5 years, I don't know, maybe even less than that.
And that's why I was saying, Pat, that when our founding fathers drafted our documents, it was for our people, not for the influx of the immigration.
See, and a lot of times, too, Kim.
I disagree.
Kim, when the country was founded, where were most of the immigrants coming from?
England,
Europe. Western civilization. We weren't taking people from Afghanistan, so I don't even think the founding fathers were anticipating that this could become such a problem. But it has gone so far.
I think you're both wrong. I think the founding fathers knew that immigration was the only way our country was going to grow.
Well, we needed it because we had all this land.
Exactly.
My point is that the founding principles are. The culture of the founding principles is being diluted and destroyed by these cultural changes.
I don't think they foresaw that.
No, I don't think they did either, because they did want to welcome immigrants.
But does our Constitution allow us to modify the Constitution to address that problem?
Sure. We can modify the Constitution. Two-thirds of the states.
This may sound unfriendly, but I wonder if we should not take a good look at passing a law that says people who were not born here should not hold federal office.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. That will be a constitutional change.
Issue. That would. Yeah, that would.
They can't even agree on birthright citizenship.
Yeah.
And that's specifically mentioned in the Constitution.
So name me one country where I can go to and get the same privilege.
You're not under our Constitution in any other country.
So the answer is probably zero.
Yeah,
zero. And if you could, you wouldn't want to.
If you broke into Mexico and tried to vote, you'd find yourself in jail.
Right. Well, if you just broke in there, you'd go to jail.
Yeah, they'd find you very quickly.
Yep.
So are we too far gone that there's no saving us?
No way.
No, I don't think
fight,
we're too
fight,
far.
Fight.
Yeah, I don't think we're too far gone.
No,
look what Trump's done with the immigration in the last 6 months.
And look what the courts have done to stop him.
But they have not succeeded in stopping
him. Every time it goes up to the Supreme Court.
So that's,
It's not too late, but we need to wake people up.
What I worry about is Trump ends his 4-year term and MAGA doesn't get reelected, the Democrats come in and open the border again.
Yeah, they would. I haven't. If they win in the midterms, they'll impeach Trump.
Yeah.
We know that.
Multiple times.
Great. Well, I'm just really concerned about the whole thing. I'm kind of bummed after the elections yesterday, and I've kind of got this bad attitude about.
Folks, on that, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers, and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
We're back. Where are we going to go,
Pat? I want to mention the oral arguments today in front of the Supreme Court over the tariffs. Justice Roberts was musing that it is the taxes are tariffs are taxes, and taxing is in the province of Congress. However, they're also an instrument of foreign policy, and foreign policy belongs to the president. So they're going to have to decide the question of whether or not the president's use of tariffs comes under that emergency powers. And that's where the rub is going to be.
And didn't Roberts himself decide that Obamacare was not a tax?
No, he said it was a tax.
It was a tax?
Yeah.
That
in the Obamacare, it kept saying, this is not a tax. And he ruled that it is a tax in order to save it. Yeah. At any rate, that's what's going on in the Supreme Court today.
It's my understanding, before we leave that subject, that Trump's argument or his administration, his side of his argument is that he was granted, the president was granted in 1970s when they amended the law, that, like you said, about emergency, if it's an emergency circumstance, the president can actually step in and use tariffs. Okay. And the two emergencies that he's, my understanding that he's putting forward is, first of all, the fentanyl crisis, which has killed hundreds of thousands of Americans. Sounds like an emergency
to me.
What's
the connection between that and a tariff?
Because that's where he's using the tariffs with China to stop China from sending fentanyl and the same thing through Mexico.
Negotiating trade.
Using economic penalty.
The emergency. And the other emergency situation that he's talking about is the excessive difference in the tariffs that we're paying, that these other countries are charging on our stuff.
Even the playing field.
Yes, that it's so out of kilter that it's an economic emergency because it could destroy our manufacturing because these other countries are putting these excessive tariffs on anything that they import from us. So that's the two emergencies that I understand that they're arguing.
And on this, if it goes to Congress, we can't even open our government, let alone respond and react on any timely basis to have effect on these international issues.
500 and some people trying to agree on a tariff.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
That won't work. We might as well say tariffs aren't even part of the system.
Well,
except people can put them on us.
And Trump has basically told the Supreme Court it's going to be hard to give that tariff money back.
And keep in mind that we had tariffs long before we had a lot of these taxes.
Yeah. And
long
also,
before we had any taxes.
We have put up with horrible trade deals for years. If Congress doesn't have the guts to deal with it, then let the president deal with it.
Well, Congress gives their power away all the time to all these agencies. Congress doesn't want responsibility. I mean, it would seem, except when they get some fanfare out of it.
When it's time to give themselves a raise.
Yeah.
They don't want Trump to succeed, that's for sure.
Just like with the government shutdown right now, everybody's so busy pointing fingers versus solving the problem. And the problem does go back, Mary, to a bunch of those give-me's to the to the illegals, having to do with the COVID aid, yeah, having to do with the Obamacare subsidy, having to do with other monies that had a set point. Like Alan said, you can't, it's hard to take it away, but it was always meant to be taken away. So they shut the whole government down, and you blame the Republicans because you're not going to give in to this continued spending. Why isn't the average liberal smart enough to figure out that's my money?
It's Trump derangement syndrome again.
Yep. Trump cannot be allowed to win. Plus, they want to undo the big, beautiful bill.
Yes.
So they're asking for $1.5 trillion to put all that stuff in the CR that they took out in the big, beautiful bill, like the $500 million for NPR, money for trans surgery, blah, 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 blah.
Also, the NGOs that were getting money that got stopped through the big, beautiful bill. It's going to be very interesting to see the campaign finance reports of Congress.
But doesn't anybody ever wonder how much welfare benefits or SNAP benefits or give me programs we would really need if we didn't have all this corruption through the NGOs and through these slapbacks?
Not only that, but how do you tell somebody who's on the administration side of welfare who has maybe five clients? Well, if they manage to get their five clients off welfare, do they still have a job?
The
good point.
In Mexico, the liberal press ran a story about a woman who's been on SNAP for 30 years, and she was supposed to be a figure of sympathy because she said, "I don't know what I'm going to do. This is horrible. Blah, blah, blah. I've been on it for 30 years. I don't know what to do." And it didn't occur to them. Of course, this is New Mexico, so most of the state is on SNAP.
And I'm sorry, but I think that a lot of the people that get the SNAP benefits, their priorities are screwed up because a lot of these people have really fancy cars.
Oh, yeah, and professional done fingernails and wigs, beautiful clothes.
Alan, last week in the County Compass, you ran that article on the growth of, like, the SNAP program and the growth of all of these aid programs that we have. They're grown to 10 times their original intended size.
Yeah.
And where did we, as individual taxpayers, where did we decide to do that compromise? No, that compromise came from some,
administrative agency.
NGO,
yes.
NGO, and a weenie congressperson.
But if you look at priorities of a family, if you don't have to worry about paying for groceries, you can pay for your nails. If you don't have to worry about paying for groceries, you can afford a car payment or something else. I'm saying that instead of the lift up, it's been the hand out that has been a crutch. It's been an in addition to instead of. You know, it's we have my income plus I get this other income from you so I can do these additional things.
Well, I can't personally think of any federal giveaway welfare program that's ever been stopped or reduced. They keep expanding. And part of the reason is you have, and this is where, you know, that you can make an argument for term limits, because you have politicians. What's their number one objective? Is to get reelected. You get reelected by offending the fewest number of voters. So in your district, you want most of the voters to like you. The way you do that, you're not going to do that by coming in and say, well, I'm going to draft a bill to make the SNAP program a two-year limitation.
And then you make it slavery if you say you've got to get a job to qualify for a SNAP benefit.
Well, that's part of the problem. Where maybe with term limits, and the person gets to that last term, they might say, well, I'm going to do this because it's best for the country, even though it's not going to affect me anymore because I'm not running for office anymore. I don't know whether it would work that way. But I'm just saying that's one of the arguments for term limits. Give these people some courage because they're not worrying about getting reelected all the time.
Nancy Pelosi has announced she's not running for reelection.
Well, she's what, 87?
85.
Well, a lot of this stuff goes back to the 17th Amendment.
Walk.
She won't be able to run. She'll have to walk.
She doesn't walk that well. That video where she snapped at that woman. Yeah. Don't you dare say any of that stuff. She was walking. Somebody was holding her hand and she was shuffling.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. She can't run.
But if you go back to the 17th Amendment, which was the direct election of senators, a lot of the problems that we're having now are go back to that. We wouldn't have had the Inflation Reduction Act had state legislatures been in charge of senators, because Joe Manchin, who was the deciding vote, would not have voted for it because he knew he would have been recalled because it was bad for the state of West Virginia.
We need to pursue that as a country, I'm telling you.
Because
I know that's big, but we need to.
We have changed the way our country functions because of that.
Wasn't the purpose of education to teach the population to read, write, and do math so that they could grow up and be a responsible contributing member of society and make money to support a family? How did the country get away from the self-motivation and ambition and pride of growing up and being a contributing member of society?
Feminism.
It was a victimization class. I mean, it was that
whole started
concept.
With feminism.
It was an attack.
Well, it was an attack on the family. Yeah. I mean, the feminists of today, no children. Don't want to get married, don't want to have children, no families. And that was one of the reasons for the animus against Charlie Kirk, because he was telling the students, get married, have children, have a family.
Now, if we can hang on long enough, we'll outnumber the liberals just because conservatives are having children and liberals aren't.
Yeah, but unfortunately, the immigrants are having children
yes,
more than that.
That's true.
But also, historically, we're a benevolent country, again. Now, you give us a victim, you name a victim or point out a victim, we're willing to support them.
The problem that we have is we've gone away from helping the helpless to helping the lazy. And I think our benefits need to be tied to your contribution. Are you in school? Are you looking to get a certificate to get a job? Are you mowing yards? Are you babysitting? Are you doing something?
We shouldn't have three generations of welfare.
That's a big, beautiful bill has put those constraints in it to some level without.
And that's what they're fighting. That's what the Democrats are fighting.
Yep.
So we have a few seconds to go.
Well, we got a little over a minute to go.
Well,
I know that
I'm glad that Jeff Odom won his re-election.
I am also.
I think he's done a good job, and he deserved to be reelected.
Amen. I agree with that 1,000%.
Yeah.
That's a nonpartisan statement also.
Well, that's a personal opinion.
Personal opinion.
I worked at the elections during early voting and on election day, and I'm still shocked at how many people don't show up to vote and how we literally have 25% of the eligible voters making the decision. But everybody will complain, but they won't get off their butts and do something.
You know what I wanted to add also? Apparently, essentially 6,700 people voted in this election.
Out of 25,000.
Out of 25,000. However, the election generally costs somewhere between $70,000 and $90,000. So it costs about $10 for each, costs the city $10 for each person that actually did come out to vote.
It's time to talk about moving the election.
And we had a precinct that had zero eligible registered voters, but they had to have the precinct open for the election.
Wow. Zero eligible?
Yeah, there's a certain number of houses that were in the considered in city limits. So I don't know. I think the number
It's in Trent Woods. It's part of a street, and it was less than 10 citizens in Trent Woods.
But of those citizens, they weren't registered, and you can't register on election day. But they still had to have the precinct open. They could have come and voted provisional, I guess.
And I'm not sure.
Okay, so that's it. And the other thing is that there's potentially impeachment going against Judge Boasberg.
Oh, yeah, Boasberg issued those subpoenas in Arctic Frost. So he approved them stealing the senator's phone records and then approved a subpoena to the phone companies to keep them from telling the senators that their phone records had been compromised.
And this is the same judge that was involved in going after Trump, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, folks, on that, we're going to have to call it a day. You guys have a great day. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.